Did you know that studies have shown affirmations can profoundly influence your psychological well-being, enhancing self-confidence and reducing anxiety? Here at Positive Birth Australia, we have crafted a 20-minute birth affirmations track filled with soulful, carefully curated affirmations to empower, inspire, and guide you to deeply remember the power you hold within. And to my fellow belly birth mothers, we have created a track specifically for you to honor that all birth is a sacred moment of profound significance. For only $5, you can download and immerse yourself in our affirmations track to transform your mindset in the lead up to birth and during labor, serving as a potent reminder of the inherent power and love you possess. Visit us at www.positivebirthaustralia.com or head to the show notes and follow the link provided to start your journey toward a more empowered birth experience. Here at Positive Birth Australia, we respectfully acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we live and work, the Turrbal and Jagera Nations. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize their enduring connection to this country. As we share stories, may we do so with respect and a commitment to learning from the wisdom of the land and its custodians. Welcome to Positive Birth Australia, a podcast created to empower and educate mothers through the power of storytelling. Each week, I'll share insightful and inspiring birth stories along with advice from leading birth experts, all in the hopes to help you create your own positive birth experience. I'm your host, Sky Waters. Let's dive into today's show. Welcome back, everyone. On today's episode, Astrid reflects on her three unique birth experiences, each contributing to her deep respect for the journey of birth. Her trust in birth was instilled at a young age as she witnessed her siblings being born at home. Her first birth, initially planned for a home birth but ending in a transfer, became a pivotal moment for Astrid. It prompted her to explore the essence of physiological birth more deeply. The natural unfolding of her second baby's birth further solidified her trust in her body's innate wisdom. However, it was Astrid's third pregnancy and birth that unraveled life's most profound teachings. Amidst the turbulence of a challenging pregnancy, her world shattered at 37 weeks when her partner was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Diving into those challenges, Astrid recounts the home birth of her daughter, who arrived in her 43rd week, weighing over 9 pounds, and she shares the invaluable life lessons she uncovered from this journey, forging deeper bonds within her relationship as they walked through the fire of life and birth together. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to Positive Birth Australia, Astrid. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on your amazing podcast.
To start off the episode, could you just let the listeners know a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I live on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and I have three children. My newest addition is little Frankie. Mm-hmm. I have Mila, who is 12, Louie, who is 10, and I also have my stepson, Tyson, who's 13, and my partner, Ryan. So, yeah, we raise our blended family here on the coast.
Beautiful. And were they all planned conceptions or?
Mila was a happy accident. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was 21 when I fell pregnant with my daughter. I was actually about to get on a plane to India and travel the world and do all this crazy stuff. And then, hello, little soul. So, yeah, that was Mila and Louie with my previous partner. And we're really good friends. So, yeah, we were just very young when we had Mila and Louie.
Mm-hmm. Did you end up going to India?
No.
No, you cancelled it.
I didn't. Well, actually, as it turned out, I had terrible morning sickness and I was like, there's just no way I'm going to a third world country this unwell. But they had mucked up just a small part of my flight and I was able to get a full refund and we ended up going to Fiji for a baby room.
Oh, so perfect.
It was amazing. Yeah. My son Louis, he was planned. I really wanted a sibling for Mila. So he came along in 2013. And yeah, I had really, really easy pregnancies with Mila and Louis.
Amazing. So let's jump into those two birth experiences first, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
How were those experiences? And also, being only 21, what was your perception of birth at that age?
So I'd watched most of my brothers and sisters being born at home by my mum.
Wow, that's so cool.
So birth to me was, oh, I'm from New Zealand, by the way. So home birth is very normal over there, and really popular as well. So it was very normal for a family to have home births. My mum made it look way too easy. So I also have a lot of midwives in my family. My grandmother was a midwife for a community in New Zealand, and I would like go with her to postnatal visits and things like that as a child. So I had a really healthy perception of birth and a real love for it. So when I went to give birth to my daughter Mila at 21, I did no preparation at all. I was like, you just have a baby at home. That's just what you do. You know, you don't have to do anything. Ended up being a really, really difficult labor. So I planned to birth her at home. I ended up getting transferred to hospital. She was posterior. I still gave birth to her naturally, but I just needed a bit of relief with some gas and an epidural to get through that labor.
Yeah. Who did you have in the birth space with you that time?
My mum was with me.
Nice.
And I had a midwife and a student midwife.
Okay.
And obviously, like, what I know now and looking back and all my life experience, I could see how things could have been different with her birth, but it was beautiful all the same.
Yeah, of course. Would you be okay sharing those reflections?
Yeah.
Just because I think it's really powerful to be able to sit in reflection.
Yeah, definitely. I think that even though I had this full trust in birth, I hadn't done my own preparation.
So important.
It really, really is. Like, because we're not around birth a lot, and we're not actually experiencing a lot of discomfort in our lives either. I was working as a makeup artist on film and television at the time. I worked right up until I gave birth to her. Like, I was at a fashion show doing makeup the night before.
Wow.
I just had no concept of...
Yeah, 21 though, full of energy.
I was. And I was so in love with being pregnant, and yeah, I was just feeling amazing. So I did no prep, so I'd really recommend my younger self to do some preparation. And also, a lot of emotional stuff came up for me during labor. I wasn't prepared for that. I just remember being in this really crunchy contraction, and I started bawling after, wondering if my mum was proud of me, if I'd done enough to, yeah, just be a good daughter and a good person. And that was kind of the beginning of my transformation as a woman and coming into my womanhood. Was that labor, and I was like, okay, I've actually got some stuff there. And for me, pregnancy and labor just brings it all up to the surface. So I think that doing just a little bit of reflection, digging around and acknowledging the feelings that do come up, because it's huge.
Yeah.
It's a huge rites of passage.
Absolutely.
And for my next birth, so my son, with the knowledge I had and knowing who I was a lot more. And that birth was actually really painful and really intense for me, for my body. And so I did a lot of preparation for him. I did heaps of yoga. I stayed really active. I didn't work like a crazy woman leading up to it. And then, in saying that, my daughter broke her leg leading up to his birth. So that was a whole thing. But it all worked out, and I had him in a birthing center in New Zealand. So we have like a bit of a middle ground there. I was going to have a home birth with him, but we had to move house, and I just didn't feel connected to the home. I felt like I just needed to be away somewhere where I could really focus on giving birth to him and have a lot of support after I gave birth as well. Mm-hmm. Whereas I knew being at home, I'd be straight back into looking after a toddler, not being, you know, fed meals and getting all the support like breastfeeding that I needed. Mm-hmm. So the birthing center was just this amazing middle ground for me. It was a really straightforward birth. He came within about 6 hours. Just kind of boring to talk about. It was so straightforward, actually.
How did you feel after that birth?
I felt really empowered. Mm-hmm. I felt amazing. I felt incredible. It's that feeling of I did that. I got through that, and it wasn't that boring, because I did go to some really amazing depths with his birth. As you know, like you go to this other world, and just experiencing that is within me. And I really learned to tell myself that these contractions or surges were actually coming from my body. Nothing was harming me, because I had a healthy pregnancy and baby. These sensations were coming from me. My body was doing this, and I didn't need to be afraid of it. It doesn't mean it wasn't hard. It was still, you know, difficult and crunchy and
yeah. So there's obviously quite a big gap between your first two and Frankie. Mm-hmm. Take us to that in-between stage. Was there, did you see yourself having more children in the future?
Okay, so yeah, there's a 10-year gap between my daughter Frankie, who I just had 2 weeks ago, and my son Louis. Mm-hmm. I always felt I would have more children. I didn't know how that was going to come about. Unfortunately, my partner and I split up when my son was about 2 years old. We live very close together now and have an amazing co-parenting relationship.
Nice.
So I was on my own for some time. And then I met Ryan 7 years ago. And almost instantly we both felt there was a little soul hanging around us, and we always thought it was a little girl, but being a blended family, we really took our time to conceive her. We wanted to make sure that we were a good unit. Step families can be really complicated. They come with new dynamics, so that's why we've only just done it now. And obviously, I'm nearly 35 now, so I've had a ton of life experience. And yeah, I actually love being a mother in my 30s and having babies too.
Yeah. And you're so much wiser.
I'm just more chilled. I was so uptight about a lot of things. I was such a perfectionist with my other kids. And yeah,
I feel very relaxed
now. Because I have to say, and for all the mamas out there who've just had a baby and have a toddler in tow, the hardest thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's next level.
Yeah.
Whereas like the other night Frankie was cluster feeding. My partner's actually just had brain surgery. So that's other thing, a part of our story.
Yeah.
So the kids were just able to make dinner for us.
Wow.
I could ask them to do that. They can put themselves to bed. I don't have to strap them into car seats. It's pretty easy, actually. And they're really awesome kids.
They sound beautiful. So let's jump into Frankie's birth experience.
Yep.
You said that you could feel her around you.
Yep.
So did you guys call her in? Was it a conscious conception?
Yeah, it was a conscious conception, in that Ryan and I planned her. We said we really want to have a baby this year. I didn't want to wait too much longer. Yeah, we really did call her in massively. We did experience a miscarriage just before her. And it was really interesting, because I felt that it was a little boy. And I was like, oh, that's really surprising. And Yeah, it was obviously very sad. It was very early on, but it just showed me even more how much I wanted to have another baby. So that was the gift from that was, I'm so ready for this. Yeah.
How was your pregnancy with her?
Pregnancy was actually very difficult.
Okay.
I really prepared my body. I was very fit. I had just done the Camino, which you walk from Portugal to Spain, which is actually part of my birth prep because I wanted to do something kind of extreme.
Yeah, wow.
Challenge myself. But yeah, I got really bad morning sickness. And I actually felt like I completely lost who I was in those first few months. Mm-hmm. It was like I just got completely emptied out. I didn't really know who I was, which was a really scary place for me. I would, you know, if I went to a professional, they would probably say I had perinatal anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I actually did go and talk to someone because I was just quite shocked at how I was feeling. Because she was planned and because I was so excited about her coming, it really took me by surprise. Yeah. And I had some really dark days, feeling very unwell. And I just had to eventually surrender to that, okay, for whatever reason, this pregnancy is asking me to let go of a lot of beliefs, a lot of ideas of who I think I am, about what pregnancy is supposed to look like as well. And I was not that radiating Instagram model pregnant woman whatsoever. I blew up, from the heat, like living in Queensland. Mm-hmm. I got hypothyroidism, I think that's how you say it.
Yeah.
I just got all the things. I got all
so
the things.
Rude.
Yeah. So yeah, I had a really tough pregnancy, and we also we went and got a dating scan. We had our 12-week scan, and then on our 20-week scan we discovered that she had a choroid plexus cyst on the brain.
Oh, okay.
Which I now know is very common.
Right.
And
could you explain what that is?
So when the baby is developing, their brain is growing at a rapid rate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a little bit of fluid can build up in the choroid plexus. I'm sorry if I'm not saying that right. And it can form a little cyst. Usually they just resolve on their own. But it can be an indicator of some pretty severe abnormalities in the baby.
Okay.
So we went into a lot of fear. We hadn't done the NIPT test, so we were like, oh my god, you know, are we facing having a child that may not make it or has a disability? So that was really hard as well. It was just like another layer to already quite difficult pregnancy. Mm-hmm. But it did resolve itself. And we did get an extra scan at 34 weeks to check on her, and she was fine.
Amazing.
Yeah. So there was that layer to it. And then just before Christmas, my partner was diagnosed with a brain tumor. So that's obviously not something happening to me, but it was a huge thing for our family.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. He had a meningioma, so they're one of the most common brain tumors. How I usually navigate things in life is getting a lot of knowledge and doing a lot of research, talking to people. So as soon as I found out that, okay, this is a common brain tumor, I don't know, something in my brain was able to go, this could be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we can get through this. It didn't appear to be malignant or cancerous. And it's really funny, like, when you have these challenging situations, things become really awesome. We're like, yay, it's not the bad brain tumor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You get really positive about the strangest things. So,
yeah, okay.
But my partner was losing his ability to walk properly, to be able to work.
Oh, wow. And is that just from the pressure of the tumor on his brain?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was putting pressure, it was on his right side of his brain, putting pressure on his, all of his sensory nerves.
Mm.
And we were just out for dinner one night and he was like, I can't walk. I'm like, what do you mean you can't walk? He's like, I can't move my legs. And then it passed, but we're like, okay, we better get you to the doctor. So that's how we discovered it. So yeah, he was dealing with severe headaches and nausea, just lots of symptoms. And then obviously we just had to decide what to do next because I was about to give birth. I was about 37 weeks when we found out. We're planning a home birth. You know, we've got three other children to care for. It's like, how are we going to do this? You're going in for brain surgery. I'm going to be giving birth. And there was a real personal grief around what he was going through and what could happen. And then also that this time was meant to be really special for us.
Yeah.
This is the only baby we were going to have together. And yeah, it felt like it stole a specialness.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of emotional stuff to work through. The surgeons wanted to operate on him straight away. And we asked if they would be able to push it out to later January so that Ryan could be at Frankie's birth. Yes, I guess this is kind of lead into her birth.
Yeah, perfect.
So she was all engaged in my pelvis by 37 weeks. I had a private midwife that I was working with, and she was incredible at supporting us through this time as well. Then we were waiting, preparing. We thought we'll still go for a home birth, you know, because we've got the support of our midwives, my mum. It means that Ryan, even if he was unwell, could just sit there and just at least watch and be there for Frankie's first breath. So that was really, really important to him. Then 40 weeks rolled around, no sign of labour.
Of course.
41 weeks, no sign of labour. 42 weeks.
Oh, Lord.
No sign of labour.
Oh, no.
And it was just getting closer and closer to Ryan's surgery date.
Mm.
And we rung the surgeon and we're like, I think it was like 2 days before he was meant to go in. And we're like, baby hasn't come yet. We feel that Astrid is, you know, too stressed. Her body isn't doing the things it needs to do.
Yeah.
So I was stressed about Ryan going in for surgery. And I was stressed that I was going so over.
Yeah.
So
that would have been so hard.
It was really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I mustered a lot of strength in that time. Okay. Looking back, I'm like, I'm going to have to do a lot of processing around all of that.
Yeah.
So leading up to that, we asked the surgeon if we could even push Ryan's surgery a little further back, like to February. And they're like, there's just no way he will have a stroke or a big seizure. We have to do this on this date. There's just no more waiting. So Ryan and I had to make plans that he wouldn't be there for the birth.
Yeah, okay.
A possibility. And I remember having this consult or a chat with my midwife, and I was like, you know, on one hand, I just want her to come when she's ready, when my baby's ready, when my body is feeling ready. And on the other hand, I feel selfish because here's this man who I love, who is possibly going to miss out on his daughter's birth. And that's huge for their connection as well. And then the other hand is this dangerous going this over as well? So that all played into it. But ultimately, Ryan and I decided to let Frankie come on her own terms with the careful guidance of my midwife.
Can I just quickly ask, how far along were you with your other two pregnancies?
Bang on.
Bang on.
Bang on. 40 okay. weeks. So this is quite That's unusual for me. I know.
But yeah. I guess that kind of, you know, not confirms, but it shows that it was probably most likely the environmental stuff impacting your labor, right?
Yeah. I mean, possibly. Or she just wasn't ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How big was she?
She was 9 pounds.
Oh, she, okay.
She wasn't little.
Yeah, that's a big bubba. How big were your other two?
So Mila was 6 pounds.
Okay.
And Louis was 7 pounds. So yeah, it was quite a bit bigger for me, mm-hmm. for my body. But then the night before Ryan's surgery date rolled around and baby wasn't here, and we tried one last ditch to get me into labor, doing all the things, and you know, the next morning we had to take him to hospital. And it was just heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. And we're actually driving to the hospital and we had the radio on, but it was like completely turned down. And then we were like, oh, we could hear something coming through the radio. And I'm like, can you turn this up? And it was our song playing. Aww. And we were just bawling our eyes out. And it was a beautiful sign of our togetherness and our love and what we were going through. But yeah, a lot of grief that day. Mm. And we had the surgery. It went amazing. It was a lot bigger, the tumor, than they had originally thought. So it was just so good that it came out when it did. He was paralyzed in his left leg and left arm for quite a few days. He still got a limp, but he's taught himself how to walk again.
Okay.
I'm just going to jump back just before he went into surgery. Mm-hmm. We went to our favorite waterfall together with the kids, and it's called Motha Mountain. It's this gorgeous place out in Gympie, which is near where I live. And I actually lost my mucus plug that day.
Oh, okay.
So that was really exciting. But then also, you know, waking up the next morning and nothing happening was like that, oh, really, nothing. Mm. But that was the first sign that something was shifting. And then as soon as he went into hospital, I started having more discharge and mucus. And I'm like, this baby's coming this week. And then 4 days later, he's still in hospital. I've been at home and just feeling pretty miserable. I've got the kids on my own. I'm exhausted. We're having a heat wave.
Oh, that was brutal, that heat wave.
Yeah, right. And I kept saying to my friends, I'm like, it's not just me, right? It's not just because I'm pregnant. It's hot.
Yeah, it was hot. So how long did he have to be in hospital for after surgery?
He was meant to be in hospital for at least 7 days. Mm-hmm. And then he was to come home and be on bed rest for 2 weeks and then just slowly integrating back into life after that. So he'd been in hospital for 5 days and I started having a bloody show. And I kind of jokingly messaged him that night on the fifth night and said, oh, if I had to come and get you now so you can come be here for the birth, would the doctors release you? Not thinking that would happen at all. And then I get a call from his doctor and he was like, are you going into labor? And I'm like, pretty sure I'm going into labor. He's like, all right, we're going to get Ryan home to you.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah. So they dosed him up on all the good stuff and, you know, he was able to come home. It wasn't going to be this huge risk. It was just more that, you know, being home, you haven't got that round the clock nursing support. So yeah, he arrived home at 11 o'clock that night. I helped him through the door and we just sat down and held each other and cried, and yeah, just so grateful he was able to come home.
How were you feeling physically at that point when he got home?
I was feeling very heavy, and I wasn't having any surges yet. Just a real heaviness and a real change in my mood. I felt quite spacey, and yeah, I just felt different. I knew it was coming. And I just said, I think we're going to have a baby by at least Sunday. That was like 3 days away. And then the next morning I did wake up feeling very, very emotional. It was quite confronting having Brian home and seeing him so, well, he wasn't unwell as such, but just he had this, you know, huge, huge scar wrapping around his head, and he was in a lot of pain. And I just got worried for him actually being home, and had we done the right thing bringing him home this early? Birth is pretty intense. It requires a lot of energy, even from the people supporting. And I had to do school drop off, and I just had this huge cry in the car. It was like one of those wailing sobs, you know, reaching down to your very depths of just everything. And that I wasn't actually having surges yet. I did go into a bit of fear, like, is this just not going to progress because of my mental health right now? So I had this huge release. And then I even messaged my midwife and I said, I think we need to start talking about induction, which is something that wasn't something I had planned, because I'd always had gone into spontaneous labor. And that was a huge thing for me to come to. So we had actually, she booked me in for, or just to get my waters broken, to see if that would get things going in a couple of days time. And again, I had to let go of my idea of what birth and pregnancy meant for me. You know, I had envisioned this beautiful home birth and candles and music and so peaceful. And I actually came home and I packed away all my home birthing stuff. I had this beautiful trolley set up with all the oils and all the affirmation cards, and I put it away. And then I packed up the birth pool, and I let go of every perception I had, every belief I had around birth.
Love that.
And when I did that, maybe an hour later, I went into labor, like full labor.
I love that. That is so powerful.
It is. It was such a good lesson for me with my beliefs in control, and what it means to be a woman, because you're just amazing no matter how you do this, how you go into it. So, I started having these really strong surges, mainly in my, I could really feel them in my sacrum. And that was probably like mid-morning. And then I really wanted to be with my mum, actually. She lives down the road from me. And I'm like, can you take me to the beach? I just need to be in the water. So I drove to her place. And I was having surges driving, which is probably not something I should publicly say. But I could still drive, okay. And it was just really exciting. At the same time, I was staying really grounded with it, because I thought, well, this could all just stop too. So let's just, keep this really chill.
How far along were you at this point?
43 and 1 day. 43 weeks in 1 day.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah. That's based on my menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
I got to my mum's place, and she was like, she just took one look at me and she was like, whoa, are you sure you want to go to the beach? I'm like, yeah. Because she just knows. She knows me. She knows the look of a woman in labor. And we went down to our favorite beach, and the sun was setting, and I kind of did get my dreamy peaceful time that I had imagined. Like I was just sitting in the water and the sky was just putting on this incredible show of colors, and I was in complete awe and gratitude just for life and being in these waters and being with my mum, and she was just holding me. And it's a moment I'll never forget. It was my favorite part of actually the whole labor. And then we decided to drive home, and she was like, let's just grab a pizza. So like sitting outside this pizza place, having these really strong surges.
I love that. What better place to be than outside a pizza shop?
And my brother calls me, and we're really close, and he's like, you're having a surge now. I'm like, yeah, hold on a second. And breathing through it, he's like, are you going home soon? I'm like, oh yeah, we're just grabbing some pizza. He's like, Astrid, like, you've just had two contractions 2 minutes apart, you need to go home. I'm like, oh, it's fine, this could be hours.
Yeah.
We go back to my mum's place, and she's like, I want you to jump in the shower, and I just want to like exfoliate your body for you and rub oils into you. And I mean, I'm quite an open person, but it's not something I'd usually do, just, you know, get nude and have a shower with my mum. But it just felt really right. And yeah. I'm standing there in this dark bathroom, and she'd lit candles, and just having my mum just like scrub my back and massaging me. And it was just a beautiful moment between women.
Mm.
And again, another just surrender into being cared for and letting go and letting her be able to support me that way.
Mm.
And I think it was important for her because of what we'd been through. She needed to give me that love. Then I got dressed and I laid on her bed for a while. And I was like, okay, we really need to go home. Otherwise, I'm not going to move. I was getting into that space of, you know, when you can't move from your birthing space.
Mm-hmm.
We drove home, I got through the door, and I was like, right, I'm in labor. And his whole face just lit up, and he's like, right, what can I do? And I'm like, nothing, it's okay, I've got this. He's like, no, I want to be useful. So he got the birth pool back up that I'd just taken down. And then it all came on really thick and fast. I had a TENS machine, which I absolutely loved, especially because it was all in my back. I had my comb, and I was very vocal. So that's just me in labor. I'm a very vocal person. I need to sound it out. And my sound rises with the surge and then comes back down. I didn't have the candles lit. It wasn't, I guess, what I had fully imagined, because it came on so fast, that active labor part. I labored a lot just in the dark in my bedroom, just with my mum and my partner. And it was beautiful, though, and it was strong. It was just such a strong labor in every way of that word. And then my partner called our midwife when it was getting pretty close to delivery. And so I started to feel that really, again, that very strong sensation in my butt. I was like, I feel pushy already. I was going toilet a lot. And then when my midwife came, I jumped in the birth pool. We had a birth photographer come as well,
mm-hmm.
because we thought that Ryan wouldn't be there. So she put her hand up to come and support us and create a film for him. I'm still so glad she came, because she was incredible.
Mm.
As soon as I got into the water, I went into transition, and it was very, very intense. Probably the most intense labor and transition I've experienced out of my children. And you just go to that other space.
Mm.
Because I'm from New Zealand, actually, I felt myself going back there and back to the land at one point.
Oh, wow.
And I was like calling out to my ancestors there. Just this one contraction just got me, and it just sent me off. And it was a beautiful, empowering feeling to have. And I had that mantra in my mind that women for thousands upon thousands of years have done this, and that they're with you. You know, you can call upon them for that strength. And I felt the power of women in that labor.
Mm.
And look, I didn't have a quiet, peaceful, pain-free labor. It was painful. I felt it in every part of my body. But I think I needed to. It was like I also had a bit of a cathartic release of everything. As we're talking about in the beginning, everything that comes up, and mine came up through sensation.
Mm, wow.
So, yeah, it was fire. and then with pushing her out, again, it was all in my butt. I had the really strong reflex. I can't remember what it's called again. Is it fetal ejection?
Fetal ejection reflex, yeah.
I had that really, really strong, which I actually quite liked. Because I sort of just let my body...
Say that.
Yeah, it can either be overwhelming or like, okay, I've just let my body do this. I just got into a squatting position in the pool. And after that transition contraction that I had, I think my midwife could see that I was feeling pretty like, whoa. And she just said, Astra, just put your hand between your legs. And I could feel her head. And I was like, right, let's get this baby out.
Yeah.
And it was just relief and love. And oh my God, she's really coming. After waiting for so many weeks, any overdue mama will know that feeling of, I feel like my baby's never going to arrive. And it becomes really hard to imagine feeling them and holding them. So, yeah, her little head was there, and she did the perfect delivery. She went back up and came down and stretched me, went back up again, stretched me again. A lot of intensity with her head coming through. And she was kicking me the whole time. She was coming out. I was like, whoa. And first the head, and then quickly the shoulders, and then the rest of her body came out and pulled her up to my chest, and was just in awe and disbelief, instant connection with her. I didn't think I would have a connection with her because of a bit of trauma I was going through leading up to it. It was a big fear of mine, but it was just instant love and just pride in what I'd done to get her there. And I felt all 9 pounds of that baby coming out.
Go, mama. And did you see her and think, yes, she's quite big?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you're a Bonnie wee lass.
Love that.
And then, yeah, my partner just had his arms around me, and we were just cuddling her and admiring her. And then I wanted to get out of the water, and I just went and laid on the couch holding her, and I had some really strong after pains. Actually, they took me by surprise. So I was trying to absorb the moment, but also, yeah, they were intense as well. And I could feel that I wanted to get the placenta out. So I just went and sat on my toilet. We had like those bluey mats sort of hammocked in the toilet, and I just turned all the lights off, and I asked my partner to sit in front of me and just hold me while I went through that last part of my labor. I had learned it was really important to just keep that space really sacred so the placenta can come away in a healthy way too.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened really quickly, and I just felt instant relief to not be pregnant, to have everything out of my body. And we had her placenta in a bowl, and the midwives tucked me into bed, and she was attached to a placenta for at least 4 hours, just while we got used to each other and just let nature do its thing. I was really lucky that I had that opportunity to allow for that. I didn't have a huge bleed or anything like that after. And then we were going to do a cord burning ceremony, but I was actually so tired. I just needed to sleep. Mm. And they were like, it's going to take a while. Well, you know what? Just cut it.
Yeah, look, I've heard it does take a while, yeah. Like 10 to 15 minutes. Yeah. So I don't blame you.
And I had really strong after pains. I was like, I just need some Panadol now. I need a good rest. And again, letting go of the ideal of the romanticizing. Mm, yeah.
The theme of your story, right?
It really is. And that was her incredible, empowering, intense birth story.
Amazing. And did you do anything special with her placenta?
Yes. So, because I'm from New Zealand, we have a tradition of burying the placenta. It's called the whenua. So the placenta is called the whenua and land is whenua. So we return it back to the land.
Beautiful.
And there's a really special place that Ryan and I would like to bury her placenta. So we'll do that when the time's right.
Mm, I love that. And how was Ryan throughout the entire experience? Like, was he okay physically? I'm sure he was probably high on oxytocin towards the end there.
Yeah, he was. He was high on adrenaline, the oxytocin. Mm. He did amazing because everyone kept checking on him. Mm. He was so there for me. Anytime I needed to hold him or have him hold me, he was just there. And he said it was a very empowering experience for him too. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Such a beautiful ending for what was, you know, a pretty turbulent start, but profound lessons throughout. Yeah. Birth is such a teacher in that way.
It is.
And then so are our children. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, your parenting journey with Frankie.
I know. I know, because they always say, like, you know, the births kind of determine what your child's like.
Yeah, they give you an insight into what you're in for.
Oh, okay. She's going to walk me through the fire.
Totally. But at least you know what to do, you know. You just got to let go of expectations and surrender to the flow, right?
Yeah.
So before we wrap up the episode, I just wanted to quickly ask, with you going so far in your pregnancy, which is amazing and obviously what Frankie needed, did you have any restrictions with your home birth midwife? Because I know, most women, you start getting that induction threat at around the 42-week mark, right?
I don't know about the restrictions. I did choose to have a check at the hospital. That wasn't required of me. I didn't have to do that. That's something that I wanted to do because I wanted to make sure everything was okay. There wasn't a more physical reason as to why I was so overdue, and I wanted to make sure my baby was healthy. And at that appointment, I could feel instinctively that she was okay, and all the stats came back to confirm that. And then the obstetrician was the only one that put a bit of pressure on me. So she has to do her due diligence, ask me why, give me all the statistics. And I just said, I'm waiting for my partner to come home. And I signed a waiver to say that I had declined induction.
Okay.
And that we had a plan. But I also would not go past 44 weeks.
Okay.
Well, actually, even before then, because like I said, I'd called my midwife and been like, I think we need to do this induction now, just before I went into labor.
Yeah. So do you have any tips that you could share on how you stayed grounded in that trust with your baby, that she will decide when the perfect time is to come into this world, particularly because you had so many external factors putting pressure on you and almost forcing a timeline. So what were some of the things that you found helped you stay connected to that trust in your baby's divine timing?
It was my third baby. So I had even though I was going through a lot, I had a pretty good idea of my body.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of work around my physicality, emotions, that sort of thing. But I would get really clear at the beginning of your pregnancy or even before you conceive around what induction means to you, when you're willing to do that, you know, what's involved, when you should do that, and yeah, do a lot of your own research around it. I found that Dr. Rachel Reed, an amazing resource, Rhea Dempsey as well, and I'm a firm believer in continuity of care. I was really lucky that I had the ability to have a private midwife. It is expensive. I know that's not available to everyone, but she knew me, and I made sure I checked in with myself a lot, and I did choose to get that hospital check, so the monitoring as well. What else? From a mental state, just I would keep talking about it with whoever's caring for you. Share with them your fears and what's going on for you around that. And also check your dates. Because was I 43 weeks? You know, that's based on my period. I know when I conceived. I actually reckon I was more like 42.
Okay, yeah.
Which is still quite a lot over. I had an amazing acupuncturist, and she had children similar ages to my older children, and she gave birth in Japan, and 43 weeks is actually the norm over there. So there's a lot of places around the world where 40 weeks isn't the end date. Just check in with you and your baby constantly. You know, you do want to make sure that your baby's healthy. I mean, I'm not someone who goes into things completely blind. Like, I did love having that support of my midwife. I needed that. I needed the extra reassurance. I would talk to other women who have gone over as well. So I was chatting to other women. And you've just got to keep yourself busy. If you've made that decision that you're going to let yourself go into spontaneous labor, you do have to busy yourself a little, because each day you wake up and you're just like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
So what about Ryan? Is he okay now? Like, what's the prognosis with that?
Mm-hmm. He has to get scans every 6 months.
Okay.
And has to make sure that he's not getting any other symptoms, you know, prior to that time. So there's always a chance with these tumors that they're going to grow back. They can never get every single cell out. Mm-hmm. They try to. So it's just keeping an eye on it. But the pathology test came back and it's definitely benign. It's not malignant.
Awesome.
So at the moment, it's happy days. And he's just on his road to recovery and healing. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love your story. And I feel like there's so many just deep lessons throughout, which is really profound. And even, you know, down to your daughter's fluid on the brain, even that feels connected in a weird way.
Strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
In hindsight, you know, it's a whole thing. You look back and you're like, oh, I shouldn't have been so stressed. But
all part of the process, though, right?
It is. And you got to accept what your experience was. And I've had to accept even parts of my birth. And go, it wasn't this like quiet, peaceful birth. It was loud and intense and fiery. So
so symbolic to everything that you went through, right?
Yeah.
So looking at your entire journey, what would be some key pieces of advice you could share with any expectant mothers out there?
I would share to do some preparation. Physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Again, Dr. Rachel Reed is, I'm a real fangirl of her. I got to meet her yesterday, actually.
Oh, nice. At the Born at Home film?
Born at Home.
Nice. Amazing.
And Just coming back to the acceptance piece, just with every moment of your pregnancy, whether you are feeling the best you have ever felt, the most empowered, or you feel like absolute crap, just acknowledging it and accepting it, that's your journey, and it's not right and it's not wrong. There is no perfectionism in this. From a real practical sense, I found exploring my sexuality, my primal self, being okay with the poo, the wee, the blood of birth, and doing that in front of other people, and being really animalistic. That was really important for me to be okay with going into it. It's really good for the hormones. And, you know, you might look back and be like, oh, my God, I did that in front of all those people. But it's actually a really important part of birth to be, again, let go. Just let it come. Yes, I did a lot of practices, I guess, around rewilding myself.
Any particular practices that you could share with us?
So just in my life in general, I've done a lot of work around sexuality. And I, like I said, I did the Camino, which was a big, huge challenge. I wanted to do hiking in nature alone. On the other side of the world.
Oh, did you do that so, alone?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
You see people, but yeah, I did it alone. And I wanted to be able to do that for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, spending a lot of time in nature, just observing it. I did a lot of belly dancing leading up to it as well. So, yeah, just getting into that sacral space that really... that real womanly space of mine, just being and questioning, inquiring, what's there for me? How do I feel as a woman? How do I feel sexually? How can I open up even more and be unabashed in who I am as a woman?
Love that.
Yeah.
I forgot to ask, were your kids present at your birth?
So they weren't present. They had actually gone to their dad's that night. So we share the kids 50-50. I did plan on having them there, but it just worked out that they weren't. Mm-hmm. And I think, in a sense, I'm kind of glad they weren't, just because of the intensity of the labor. But I'm going to show them some video and... yeah, they can be a part of it that way.
Yeah, perfect. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, Astrid, thank you so much for coming on the show today and for sharing your journey with such vulnerability and openness. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, and I love your podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, big love to you and all the mamas on this journey.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. Such a profound story of strength and resilience. I loved so much the deep reverence that Astrid and her partner showed when it came to giving their daughter the space she needed to choose her entrance into the world, even though they were faced with so many challenges. I also really loved the element of surrender it took for Astrid to fall into labor. I think there is a profound lesson in there for all of us on the act of letting go and how powerful that can be. Let me know what your take was on today's episode over in the comment section on PBA. I love reading your feedback. And if today's episode resonated, please share it with a friend or leave a review on your podcast platform to spread the love and inspiration. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will be back next week with